I want to share with you a series of vignettes from over the course of one 24-hour period and also offer you the operative thought, the conscious or even in some ways unconscious motivation that was back of the actions occurring during this day. So here's a series of moments in miniature. First, a father is sitting in the dawning half-light next to the bed of his son. He has been sitting where he's sitting, sleepless, all night. Every one of his son's struggling breaths, every writhing twist and turn, every kicking off of the covers due to the fever has been unmissed by this father. He has watched it all in a despairing state of agony. The sickness had come on so suddenly, just 3 days before this. And yesterday, the village doctor had looked at him with eyes of sadness, of commiseration. As the light rises, this father rises from his bedside seat. He walks out of the house without speaking to his wife or anyone. He goes toward the central square of the village, where the voices of the sellers in the market can be heard, and his question to everyone he meets is his operative thought. Jesus? Where is he? Next. A man is walking a narrow section of roadway that twists up through the hills. He is on his way to Cana, high above the sea. The midday has already passed by now. It is hot. He is bathed in sweat and walking westward, upward, alone. The morning breezes have died away and he has stripped off his outer cloak. Far up ahead, he can see the roof lines of the town. He quickens his step, pushing himself to complete this 7-hour journey he's been on. There is only one thought in his mind operative: Jesus. Next, that man, the father of the morning, is standing now face to face with the man for whom he's made this journey. The people of Cana have been surrounding him since he arrived here last week. They circle around these two men even now, watching on. This desperate father is looking into the eyes of the man he has been hearing so much about. He is doing what we all do when confronted by a talked-about person, sizing him up. Head to toe, he is much like any other man, a rough-spun cloak and tunic, a worker's hands, sandals cracked and weathered with all his travels. Oh, but his face, his eyes. The look of latent power, of authority, of command, but even better, the infinite kindness of an infinite love. What did you just say? To go back? Did he say that his son is already healed back at home? This particular moment stuns me every single time I read it or think about it, just as it did again this week. That man, that father, turns and heads home. The operative thought? Jesus. Finally, it is dark now. It is night. He is very nearly back to the coast, to Capernaum, his home. He had sat down under a tree in the dusk light hours ago and accidentally fallen into an exhausted sleep. When he awoke, it took him a long moment to remember where he was, what was happening, what had been said, what he was doing. But then, the operative thought, it overtook him again, Jesus, and he stood to his feet and continued down the road toward his son. Now, past midnight, he is almost running. The full moon is sparkling on the sea down below. At a bend in the trail, he can see coming toward him the light of a lantern. As it draws nearer, he sees that the face it illumines is one of his men, one of his servants. This man is also running, coming up the trail. When they meet, his servant is the first to speak. "Your son is alive and well," he says. And when the father asks and receives the answer to his question, "When did it happen?" when he realizes the simultaneity of the promise and its receipt, when he glances up the trail that disappears in the direction of far-off Cana, the very same thought comes once again to mind. Jesus. Now, obviously, friends, I've been thinking about this narrative from John 4 all week. And what's been striking me is what I have been seeking here to emphasize within these vignettes, this man's recourse to belief, and not to vague ideas about belief, and also his conscious choice not to rely on his own native impulses or his gut. Here's what I mean, scene by scene. While sitting next to the bed of his dying son, what does this man not do? Well, give in to a relatively natural sense of despair. Instead, what does he do? Goes to seek out Jesus. Or while on the 7-hour journey to, he hopes, find Jesus, what does this man not do? Appeal to his own common sense and talk himself out of this hope. Instead, what does he do? Pushes onward toward Jesus. And after Jesus makes the seemingly preposterous claim of a healing from a distance, what does this father not do? Well, question the rationality of something so clearly impossible unless somehow made supernaturally possible. Instead, what does the father do? Trust Jesus and begin walking to receive what's been said. Finally, when he receives news of his son's complete healing, what does the man not do? Inwardly explain away the spiritual reality. Instead, what does he do? Give him everything of himself over to Jesus, if you remember what happens. I'm sure many of you, having been serious about investigating the way of Jesus for years yourself, are perfectly familiar with the opening of that famous faith chapter, Hebrews 11. Probably you know it in its most natural rendering, something like this. Now faith is the assurance of things hoped for, the conviction of things not seen. For by it the people of old received their commendation. That would be the ESV's translation of it. Now you know me, my favorite version of the New Testament, the Phillips, it renders it like this. Now, faith means putting our full confidence in the things we hope for. It means being certain of things we cannot see. It was this kind of faith that won their reputation for the saints of old. Both of these are good. But the original Greek is always interesting because the word order is almost never like ours, and the words used are so full of potential for our understanding phrasings and meanings so differently. In fact, if I could re-render these two famous verses differently for you, they might go something like this. Now, belief or faith or trust is the foundation and structure of things hoped for, the argument for those pragmatic things currently unseen. In this way, the ancients bore witness. My friends, faith is the ascription of what we see and feel in front of ourselves over and unto everything we know of Jesus within that space. I think we Christians think of faith too often only as a macrocosmic eternal economy when, from the pages of the New Testament, and especially in the Gospels in moments like this, it's very clear that it's both that and also microcosmic and totally tied to the moment we're in. Belief is foundational and also structural. It's the building block of a growing hope, and this occurs amidst the pragmatic things of the everyday. The ancients who believed gave their testimony not by esoteric etherealisms. They believed concretely in the constant, the now, the ever-present today. So why did I give you that familiar text of John 4 all broken up? Or, let's say, what am I hoping you'll remember of this in, say, 3 days' time? Well, this. That life, being momentary, literally made up of sequential moments, is all meant to be brought back to Jesus. Sitting by a sickbed, Jesus. Walking along on an important errand, Jesus. Receiving the opportunity to believe greatly, Jesus. Receiving the most wonderful blessings in life, Jesus. You see, to have a constant, unchanging place of recourse is not to regress. In fact, not to call constantly upon this one is to attempt to live life without life. If Jesus wasn't bluffing when he referred to himself as the way, the truth, the life, then there's no place where this recourse is not applicable. Moving through life, we may move with him the way. Seeking the higher, deeper wisdoms and truths available, we may go to him and have these made plain, the truth. Desiring that our everyday may find its richest, realest meaning, well, we may look to him, life himself. Perhaps I'll simply say it this way and end. You and I are as alive as we are, mindful of, believing in this Jesus, just like that father did on that day. And friends, he is always available. Maybe the question is, are we? Thanks so much for listening.